The Committee for Brisbane acknowledges the original custodians of the land upon which this podcast is being produced, the Turrbal and Yuggera people, and pays respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hello everybody and welcome to this podcast, the third in our Committee for Brisbane Subcommittee on Connectivity series. And today I have with me Dr. Dia Adhikari-Smith. And I'll tell you a little bit about her expertise in a minute. I'm Alan Patching, a professor at Bond University, and I'm pleased to bring this podcast to you. Dia holds a PhD in Power and Energy Systems Engineering, with a career that's been a blend of renewable energy research and, of course, in academia as well. She currently is focusing on decarbonisation and the future of fuels for on-road and off-road heavy vehicles in the transport, construction and mining sectors. She collaborates with industry and with government, conducting in-depth studies and formulating strategies, all aimed at propelling us towards a net zero emissions future. And we're here today to talk about how those objectives blend with and very much align with the work of the Subcommittee on Connectivity for the Committee for Brisbane, and indeed with the future Brisbane that the Subcommittee and the Committee for Brisbane see. So, Dia, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for your time and your knowledge.
Thanks, Alan. I'm very happy to be part of this podcast. Thanks for inviting me. I'm Dia from the University of Queensland's Dale Centre and the School of Civil Engineering.
Now, when we were having a chat about this before we turned the technology on to do recording, you were talking about a three-phase approach to getting adjustment in the way we do things, specifically in the area of your work. And you emphasise the importance of the avoiding, shifting and improving approach to getting things done in a way that they become, one, more sustainable and, two, more maintainable. Would you like to develop that theory and explain it in a bit more detail for our listeners?
Thanks, Alan. So in Australia, the transport sector currently is the second largest emitter, according to 2023 GHG emissions data. And it's projected that by 2030, transport will be the largest emitter in Australia. We are doing a lot. We are trying to progress trying to decarbonize our passenger cars. We have recently established the new vehicle efficiency standards for cars. We have also have got a push towards EVs for cars. However, we are still not there when it comes to heavier vehicles on our roads. According to data, there's only 1-3% of heavier vehicles on Australian roads. However, their contribution to emissions is significant, around 38% of the total road transport emissions. So we definitely need to do something about these emissions. It's not just greenhouse gas emissions, GHG emissions, but they are polluting air pollutions. There are air pollutions in the cities. They are making our cities more congested. If you look at the data for rigid trucks, you'll see that 70% of rigid truck kilometres travelled are in urban areas in majority of Australian states. They are in urban areas. So they're travelling around 100 to 150 kilometres a day, back to base operations. However, they are polluting the cities, polluting the urban areas and congesting these roads around the cities. So the way to go, of course, these are ideal candidates for transitioning to zero emission vehicles, battery electric trucks. However, we can't really transition all these vehicles, all these urban rigid trucks to battery electric trucks like tomorrow, because there are cost factors, there are significant barriers. They are expensive, there's not enough infrastructure for charging, and of course there are regulatory constraints when it comes to transitioning to zero emission vehicles in the freight industry. So we are looking at other ways. That's where this avoid, shift, improved strategy and framework comes into play.
Just before you go into that, the point you raise about the trucks being the major problem, I think most people would recognise that, but it's important for those who don't to understand that. But one of the concerns is to get a zero emissions with trucks, the batteries required to replace the fuel currently are huge. They weigh a fortune. They cost a fortune to make. And it's, even though a couple of experiments are out there and a couple of products are out there, but for the general companies, we're nowhere near the stage where electronic trucks can replace petrol-driven trucks or fuel-driven trucks as we are with the standard passenger vehicle. Is that one of the obstacles you're referring to?
Yes, that's a major barrier. So there are a significant barrier. So ATA, the Australian Trucking Association, with EVC, the Electric Vehicle Council, conducted a roundtable, a study with all freight operators, I think in 2022, and to understand what are the significant barriers to transitioning to zero emission trucks or battery electric trucks. And the topmost significant barriers that came up during these roundtables were cost. So the high cost of these trucks, they are double. For battery electric trucks, sometimes they are double. For hydrogen fuel cell trucks, they can be three times the cost of a diesel truck. Mm. So cost is definitely there. There's a lack of model availability here in Australia when it comes to these zero emission vehicles. There are regulatory constraints. So we have a certain mass at width, size of vehicles, size of trucks allowed on Australian roads. And battery electric trucks or hydrogen fuel cell trucks are considerably heavier.
Heavier because of the batteries.
That's right. And wider as well.
So you carry less load, which makes them less profitable, which makes them very unattractive.
That's right. So that's one of the reasons these regulations need to be updated and made sure that these trucks can operate on our roads. And that takes time. Mm. And the third most important barrier was a charging infrastructure.
Particularly on the long distance interstate routes.
Because trucks have much bigger batteries than cars. Yeah. So, of course, they need super fast, ultra fast chargers and sometimes megawatt chargers when it comes to long haul trucks in Australia can have a driving range of 2,000, 3,000 kilometers in a day. And of course, you need megawatt charging such that the truck's not stopping for 10 hours to recharge its battery.
And there's been a big setback there as well, because one of the major companies, an Australian company, who is exporting actually to the US even, the recharging stations, has now met financial difficulty and probably is going to go to demise. So just as we need an increase in the charging facilities, we're having a decrease in the people who can supply them. So what time frame do you see where these problems would be overcome? Are we talking by the Olympics? Are we talking realistically by 2050? Do you have a thought about that?
Well, I think it is a systematic approach or a planning, net zero planning, that we need to do when it comes to trucks in comparison to passenger cars, because we have different size trucks carrying different commodities and serving different areas. So we need to understand what are the low-hanging fruits when it comes to freight, road freight or truck decarbonization. So these urban trucks, rigid trucks, which are smaller sized and doing around 100 to 150 kilometers a day and going back to base, back to the depot at the end of its day, so at night, those are the ones that can now decarbonize to battery electric trucks.
So you're talking more the courier vans and things like
that. That's right, or Woolies and Coles trucks.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so those are going back to base at night doing 100, 150 kilometers a day. Ospo's trucks as well, going back to base at night. So these type of trucks, the driving range, actually ideal for battery electric trucks. We do have these models available right now in Australia. And if the company or the freight operator has a depot with the charging infrastructure in build, it's perfect for battery electric trucks. But the thing to remember is not all trucks in the freight operator's fleet has reached end of life. So they're not just going to discard a truck which is 5 year old and buy a zero emission battery electric truck. So we need solutions. We need a stepped approach. So we need solutions all to reduce emissions from our current existing fleets, because these are trucks that are going to run for another 10, 15 years, and they are diesel, fossil fuel trucks. So how do we reduce emissions from these trucks while we are planning to systematically transition as they come end of life to battery electric or for long haul hydrogen fuel cell trucks?
Yeah, that makes sense.
The ultimate aim is to have vehicles that are more efficient and vehicles that are running in a way in our cities that's creating less air pollution. So even if I leave aside the issue of climate change and GHG emissions, which is causing climate change, we already know the research has proved that air pollution is impacting health a lot in our cities.
And I think that's the bigger driver. And people may not consider that, but you've only got to look at the cities that have a problem with that in a big way. Beijing comes to mind, places like that, to realize that that probably should be a bigger driver, because there's no doubt about that. That's a reality. And we continue to look at both sides of the argument on climate change, global warming, etc., and proceed at a pace that delivers the outcome of less pollution and a better and more efficient system, which is what you're proposing overall.
That's right, yeah. Yes. So the only issue that happens when we only consider zero tailpipe emissions for trucks, say for example, then we are not considering how the energy that is needed to recharge the truck or refuel the truck is being produced. Mm. So if it's zero tailpipe for a battery electric truck, yes, it's not emitting any air pollution in our cities, but it's when it's going back to base and getting recharged, the electricity produced, is it being produced from fossil fuels? Is it being produced from coal? Mm. So it's not really zero emission vehicle, it's a zero tailpipe emission. It becomes even worse when it comes to hydrogen fuel cell trucks. Yes, again, it's zero tailpipe, so when it's running around in our cities, there's no air pollution, it's just producing water, and some people claim you can even drink that water, it's that clean. But
I'll leave that to you.
But hydrogen fuel cell truck, when it's refilled at hydrogen refueling stations, this hydrogen, is it being produced by electrolysis using renewable energy, or is it produced, the 98% of hydrogen currently in globally is being produced from fossil fuels? So it's not really green hydrogen, it's either gray or brown hydrogen. Mm. So then it's not really a zero emission vehicle. So that's the thing we need to consider when we are running these vehicles and calling them zero emission vehicles. So I tend to call them low and or zero emission vehicles or zero tailpipe emission vehicles.
A lot of people, particularly people around your age as opposed to mine, will remember or won't remember back to the days where former Premier of Queensland, Joe Bjelke-Petersen, once made an announcement that very soon we'd be filling our cars with water because they'd be running on hydrogen. A bit of a stretch on the hydrogen technology, but at the time people nonetheless said they'd got to be kidding, it's never going to happen. But the reality is we are talking about it now. There's the German and Australian government are working together in particular to do research on it. There's Gladstone got plants working on it. So there's a lot working in that area and a lot of possibilities. And I think the fact that we've got researchers like yourself not just saying, oh, that's a green solution, let's go, but looking, because every one of the perceived green solution when it comes to transport is really relying on electricity, and it's not green unless you're getting the green. And we're nowhere near, without nuclear anyway, at the moment. We're never going to get the wind and solar power to renew all the trucks. In fact, if we said every truck has to change tomorrow, Australia would cease to be a nation because there'd be no transport. So I think getting that message over and saying we've got to do it, but we've got to do it right, and better to take a little longer and do it right, I think that's a really strong message. Now, to get there, just as well as slowing down to go faster in a way, you've introduced this concept of the avoiding, shifting, improving as a staged approach. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that before we talk a little bit about those fixed vehicle short movements and how we can adjust that. So that theory of the avoiding, shifting, improving, rather than try to change overnight, could you expand on that a little?
So the avoid, shift, improve framework, I don't know if it was first proposed, but it's a framework that ClimateWorks, all their reports are based on the avoid, shift, improve framework for decarbonisation. You avoid, or the first approach is always avoiding, then shifting, and then improving if there's no other way of avoiding or shifting. It's very similar to the recent US decarbonization blueprint strategy that they have released, the Department of Transport, the US Department of Transport, they have released, and it's very similar to the avoid, shift, improve strategy. So what the avoid, shift, improve strategy means, firstly, we'll go into avoid. So avoid for freight, so I'll just stick to road freight and not go into passenger transport because that's completely different. The strategies play differently when it comes to the different modes of transport. So for road freight, avoid is a little difficult, but it would still mean reducing transport demand. So how we can do that, it's a little needs a little bit more planning. It's a lot more urban planning involved as well. So you build mixed use neighborhoods, so this can minimize the need for long distance freight trips within the city. So you bring the logistics closer to consumers. So there is a lesser demand for travel, lesser demand for online purchase and delivery. So that's how you are avoiding certain trips, certain freight trips. It's very minimal, but it can happen. So anything that you can reduce, say, 2 or 3 deliveries in a week, that's much better than not reducing anything at all. So it does.
You mean as opposed to everyday delivery to the same neighborhood?
That's right. So that's how you bring mixed use neighborhoods, you bring the logistics closer to consumers such that they can go and buy these things by themselves instead of placing online orders and getting freight delivered to them.
One then could argue that they're driving their cars on multiple trips and it might be better to have one car distribute.
That's right. So this is a balancing act,
yeah,
because
indeed.
What you need to do, do you want less trucks in your neighborhoods doing deliveries, mm-hmm. or do you want trucks delivering every day? In my neighborhood, I see Woolies and Coles trucks every day delivering to multiple households. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes in the same building, they're coming mm-hmm. in multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm coming to my next point in the avoid strategy is logistics, so efficient logistics. So what we are seeing right now globally is something called logistics sprawl. So what logistics sprawl means, it's warehouses and distribution centers are scattered all around urban areas. So there's not one consolidated point. Instead, there are a distribution center here, a warehouse here, and we have multiple freight and delivery vehicles running all across the urban areas, collecting something here, delivering something there, collecting something else from there, and there are a lot of empty trips that trucks are doing as well. So we can, well, and this is making the trucks very, or the logistics or the freight process very inefficient. There are empty trucks running, there are multiple number of trucks running, which can be reduced by efficient freight planning, logistic optimization, and consolidation of the warehouse. So we can have less number of truck trips. We can also not have empty trucks running back and forth. So that's one of the strategies in the avoid planning.
So really you're saying that we've got a multifactorial problem, and the best way to resolve it is with a collaboration of all those involved in the problem creation to be involved in its solution, so that we have to get the suppliers, say Woolies, Coles, all those sort of people, to convince people that a good service level is 2 or 3 deliveries a week to a particular region. We have to get the trucks who may be driving to an inventory centre may also collaborate in perhaps parcel distribution, for example. I'm just going with immediate thought at the moment, but never have an empty truck on a road pumping fumes out would be the ideal.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Empty trucks are the worst possible situation when it comes to inefficient trucks.
Yeah.
You don't want empty diesel trucks running in our cities.
And drivers don't either. They're not making money out of it.
Exactly. And which happens all the time. The Woolies trucks coming into a household with just two or three bags in our van, which is like a 6.5-ton van.
Yeah.
That's just a waste of space.
Yeah.
And a waste of fuel. So you reduce fuel consumption, you reduce the number of trips, and as a result, you reduce emissions.
So by going to a super service industry with the online purchasing, which is so big these days, we need to step back and reconsider how we can now make it more efficient, because it's not just about service, it's about emissions and a whole stack of other things and efficiencies that are available if properly planned in other areas.
That's right, yes.
Okay, sorry to interrupt there.
No,
so
that's
we've
fine.
Got an idea of the avoiding. What about the shifting?
So the shifting is the first shifting is much easier when we talk about passenger transport. It just means shifting people to lower emission and more efficient, sustainable modes. So moving people from their cars into public transport and active transport. So it's much easier when you talk about shifting for passenger transport. But when you talk about shift strategy for road freight, it's a little more difficult, like same as the avoid strategy. So for long haul road freight, the best way to shift is to shift to rail wherever feasible, which is happening because Europe has an initiative where they plan to shift 30% of their road freight to rail and waterborne marine transport by 2030. So 30% of their road freight will be shifted to lower emission and more sustainable, which is rail and marine.
They have a head start on us, don't they? Because the rail system across Europe, compared with Australia, and even worse, America, is country miles ahead of us. So how do we deal with that given our, I suppose by the same token, the population's all around the coast and Europe's all over the country.
That's right. Yeah, this is a subject which is looked into, and we have a few research projects looking into how best, or is it even feasible to have some of our road freight, the long haul, really long distance ones, some of that shift to rail freight. Rail, of course, is more sustainable and more efficient when it comes to long haul, heavy duty freight transport.
Well, hasn't that been proved in terms of transporting from Europe and Asia to Australia, where Darwin has become such an important point or port, point of entry? But now we have the rail line, that the famous for the Ghan, but it's also being used for transport so that ships don't have to travel all the way around to Melbourne. The train takes it from Darwin down to Adelaide and across to Melbourne, which is a far more efficient system.
That's right, yes.
That'd be one of the better examples we have in Australia, I think.
Yes. But this one, because I'm just focusing on road.
Yes.
So because roads are much easier, so transferring road freight, long-haul road freight to rail would be the easier way to reduce emissions from those long-haul trucks. But the long-haul trucks are also the most difficult and challenging ones for the improved strategy where we are moving into zero-emission vehicles. So that's the part we are looking into. The other option in the shift strategy is the topic which I'm currently exploring with one of my colleagues from Swinburne University, Professor Hadi Gudairi, who is an expert in freight and logistics. And we're looking at reimagining service stations to make freight more efficient and more sustainable. So that comes actually plays well within both the avoid and the shift strategy.
So I'm fascinated by that service station idea. You've mentioned it to me once before. But just before we go there, this is an unfair question, but I'll ask anyway and tell me that you can't answer if that's the right response. You've mentioned a couple of times that you are researching into this idea of getting heavy road onto rail. Without knowing the outcome from your research, what's your gut feeling? Do you think it's going to be successful in Australia, or do you think it could be problematic? Do you have a sense from the research you've done so far of what the possibilities are of achieving that?
I think for certain commodities, because we do have a few different types of commodities that are used for long-haul freight, that could be mode shifted to rail. And however, our ambitious target, like 30% by 2030, is definitely not going to happen. So it'll be a much lower transition or shift from road to rail when it comes to this long haul freight. Yeah, so we have looked into, for certain states, we have looked into how we can, or if it is even feasible, to shift some of the rail freight to road. And it is feasible, but it will not be in the immediate to medium term. It's not going to be as ambitious as 30%. So it'll be a much lower percentage.
I'm wondering if Australia should feel bad about that, because I think anybody with an open mind talking about these topics would say, in retrospect, that the United Nations 17 goals, 169 objectives, etc., are a brilliant idea, and setting an objective 2030 was also a great idea to get things motivated. But as they progress, it really is a bigger thing than we've thought about. And not only because of the environmental aspects and the difficulties you've mentioned with electricity generation, but also because part of that is also social, and you can hardly aim for the, you know, removal of fossil fuels while the Western countries are so well developed, and countries like India and several other will rely on fossil fuels because they can't afford the more expensive sustainable fuels in order to bring their standard of living up. And the United Nations predicted that. That's why ESG has S in it, the social aspects. So I think most people would say 2030 was a good idea to print, but I'd like to go back and talk to a few people who came up with that, because I don't think it was ever going to be achievable, and most people are recognising a lot of it won't be. But there's been a lot of movement in the right direction, and I think that's a great achievement. So even if we don't get 30, the fact that we're thinking about it sensibly, analysing, breaking it down and continuing to progress, I think that's a more important achievement than hitting a goal that people really didn't think in depth when they set it. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I completely agree with this. I don't think, initially, a lot of interest, a lot of research was just being focused on transitioning to zero emission vehicles. But now that we realize that there are significant barriers, we are looking at other ways of reducing emissions, making things more efficient, and having a roadmap or a systematic staged approach in doing so. And this shifting to modes from road to rail, these are all parts of that strategy, and that's how we can make things more efficient. The ultimate goal is, of course, net zero, but we can't reach there tomorrow. So we need proper planning. And still, while we are planning, we can try our best to reduce emissions. Okay. And these are the strategies which help us do so.
And that's a perfect segue, talking about strategies again, to bring us back to this concept you were just about to start talking about, and that is having a distribution system that's more efficient. So could you take us into that one? Because I'm really interested, and I think a lot of our listeners will be on this as well.
Yeah, so as I said before, we are looking into it in collaboration with Professor Hadi Gaderi from Swinburne University, and we are looking at how we can reimagine service stations as consolidation points or multifunctional micro hubs. So as I said before, in my avoid strategy, that there is logistics sprawl globally, and we can see warehouses, distribution centers scattered all around in urban areas, resulting in a lot more vehicles running around, delivery vehicles running all around our city, all around the urban areas, and we have a lot more fuel consumption, a lot more empty trucks running, a lot more emissions. So if we have a multifunctional hub, which is in a prime location, strategic location in a suburb or in an urban area, which can act not just as a micro hub or a consolidation point for a large truck to arrive, and then we have the last mile delivery happening in electric vans, cargo bikes, or even facilitating a point of delivery for drones maybe in the future. So that becomes like a micro hub, a multifunctional micro hub. We can see this is happening in certain cities in Europe. We can see it happening in Vienna, where they have micro hubs at bus stops. So they have parcel lockers there. They have big trucks coming in and cargo bikes going out doing deliveries from these micro hubs. What I think is service stations are the perfect location. The real estate or the location for a micro hub is very, very important. It has to be something people are already used to. So people are already used to driving to the service station frequently, and they know the location. It's in a prime location, in a city, in a suburb. And if we establish that, and we have more and more EVs right now, so we have EV charging locations, we have EV repair and maintenance centers in these micro hubs, we have parcel lockers, we have food, we have delivery points for drones, and of course we have the consolidation point for larger trucks bringing in things, and then delivery vehicles, vans and bikes going out to neighborhoods. So that's our concept. We are looking into it. We are looking at what's happening elsewhere. In South Korea, they are looking specifically at service stations being converted into micro hubs. It's currently under research and feasibility stage, so we are definitely looking at their work and trying to understand if we can run a similar study here.
Have you looked at including, say, post office distribution points at these courier distribution points so they all become central as well?
That's right. That would be because the reason we selected service stations, we're not saying service stations will run out of business. Maybe in longer term when all our vehicles are EVs, but they will still have fossil fuel refueling stations. But what they can have is also EV chargers. They can also have fast EV chargers for smaller trucks. They definitely need to have EV chargers for the delivery, electric delivery vans and e-scooters and e-bikes, and of course maybe some added advantage of repair and maintenance of EVs. So we want to make these service stations points where people coming in for everything related to freight and logistics and vehicles, and these become multifunctional hubs where which makes freight logistics more efficient and sustainable. We have less number of trucks running around in our neighborhood. We make our cities more livable and more people friendly.
And reduced emissions.
Reduce emissions.
And when you look at that, I'm not quite sure whether you're regarding that as primarily a shifting part of the model or an improving part of the model, but it seems to be both.
Well, I would say it's a combination of avoid and shift. So we are avoiding the number of trucks, and we are shifting the delivery or the last mile delivery to active transport and electric transport. So there's improve of vehicles, the last mile delivery. So I think it's a combination of all three, avoid, shift and improve.
And that's what I really like about what you're putting together here, because in most of the work we've done on the subcommittee, and certainly the previous discussion with David Freer, there's been about last mile, first and last mile connectivity for people getting to and from work. You're looking at it from the perspective of servicing people rather than delivering people, for want of a different word. Can we move on to the improving factor? Can you give us an explanation of what you mean by that and some examples of how we could use it?
So improve factor is the one that's mostly researched. So improve, it just means improving the vehicle's efficiency. So we can improve the efficiency of the vehicles. We can improve the efficiency or reduce the emissions of the liquid fuels that are being used. We can also improve the driving technique. So these are the factors that affect emissions from vehicles. And we are looking at improving all three to reduce emissions. The most obvious one is improving the vehicles, and that's the one that's researched everywhere, is transitioning to zero emission vehicles. Of course, to transition to battery electric or hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, we do need a lot of support and we need a lot more planning. We need to have, in Australia, we don't have targets for trucks. So when do we need to have zero emission trucks by? We don't have a set target. So globally,
but that's probably wise, is not, because we don't have any clue at the rate at which we're going to roll out electricity supply that is in fact zero emissions in itself, because of the argument on nuclear and the fact that wind and solar is not going to cut it for this sort of electricity production. So in a way, that's a circular argument still at the moment. It's something we all want, but we can't really take the big jump to get it.
Well, we are looking. Recently, the Australian government had the LCLF consultation. So the LCLF stands for Low Carbon Liquid Fuels. We did submit to the consultation. So we are looking not just for the transport sector, but for the hard to decarbonize or hard to electrify sectors like mining, like construction, like agriculture.
The heavy stuff.
Yes. So we are looking at because there are no electric models available for, say, an 80-ton excavator. So you still have to run the 80-ton excavator using a liquid fuel. So we're looking at options that are lower emissions instead of going just transitioning to zero emission, because it's not feasible.
And that seems to be a really sensible stepping stone approach to take for heavy vehicles.
That's right. And even for, say, trucks, freight trucks, we can't transition all to zero emissions or battery electric or hydrogen fuel cell right now. And in this transition phase, we can definitely use liquid fuels, fossil fuel free liquid fuels that are drop in. So these existing ICE trucks or internal combustion engine trucks don't need any modification to use a drop in fossil fuel free liquid fuel like renewable diesel or HVO, hydrotreated vegetable oil, which we are currently being used in Australia by certain construction companies for their construction vehicles. It's also used by mining companies for their mining vehicles. It's a fossil fuel free liquid fuel, so it's much lower emissions. And
so much lower. Do you have any idea of the percentage for a typical vehicle?
Well, as quoted by Neste, so Neste is the leading producer of renewable diesel or HVO currently globally, and according to them, their renewable diesel, which is called My Renewable Diesel, is around 90% over the fuel's life cycle. So,
and I've also heard that in the States they're getting 12-15% improvement in standard fossil fuels as well, and that's a stepping stone as well.
Yeah, so it's very important to remember that when we talk about the improved strategy, people just focus on vehicles. So just moving to zero emission vehicles, battery electric, hydrogen fuel cell, but it's improved not just the vehicles. In this transition phase, every bit is important. We need to reduce emissions, which can be done by also improving the liquid fuel by using a different and advanced biofuel in the currently existing fleet that we have. We can also, there's a lot more studies happening right now. I have not done or looked into it, but I've attended a few seminars on this, is improving driver efficiency, how the driver is driving the diesel truck. So if the driver is trained properly, he can drive the truck and considerably reduce fuel consumption. So if he can do that, of course, that's reduction fuel consumption. Reduction means directly reduction in emissions.
Yeah.
So driver efficiency training is happening all over the world, and they have recorded data showing after the driver efficiency training how you're driving, when to brake, not idling. So all these things are resulting in lower fuel consumption.
And are there any stats on what sort of percentage reduction from driver training?
I think there was one seminar I attended which said 10 to 12%.
Yeah.
So that's 10 to 12% reduction in fuel consumption. Yes.
Yeah.
So anything, any small thing we can do to reduce emissions is better than nothing at all.
Well, I think we've headed towards the end of our time there, dear. I have to thank you for a number of things. One, your incredible expert knowledge on the topic. Secondly, your capacity to bring it down into those steps and stages that make it so easy to comprehend for people like myself who are lay people in the field and who are interested in the topic. But in particular, because you're the type of academic who looks at both sides of the argument and realizes there are support for both sides and take a very sensible, practical approach to moving forward. So I think the listeners like myself will have found your information incredibly insightful, incredibly interesting, and incredibly relevant to the challenges we faced in Southeast Queensland ahead. So dear Adhikari Smith, thank you so much for your time, your insights, and your knowledge. It's very much appreciated.
Thanks so much, Alan. Thanks for inviting me to this podcast. And it's been great talking to you and discussing everything related to freight decarbonisation.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.